You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon and welcome to The Weekend. And joining us on today's show is Blake Barrow. Blake is the CEO, Executive Director of the Rescue Mission here in El Paso. And Blake, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we start talking a little bit about your background, I want to talk about the Rescue Mission because you all have a brand new building.
It's great. Yeah, we do. Now, the history of the mission, we go all the way back to 1952. So it's older than me. This is now our fourth location. We had been down on Paisano since 1985. And, of course, that's where the new Loop 375 is going through. So Texas Department of Transportation bought us out and said, you guys need to move. And with the help of City Council, we found what really is a beautiful tract of land. We're right off of Cotton Street. We have two city blocks between Cotton, Olive, McGoffin, and Lee. And the first phase of development is now finished. It's only phase one. But phase one has taken us from 120 beds at the old facility to 195 now. So it's a big expansion. Phase two is exciting. We want to build a separate shelter for families with children, and that will go on the Cotton Street lot.
Tell me a little bit about that restaurant, because I was just talking to them a little while ago about the great barbecue you all serve.
Well, thank you. And I've got a new business card. My job title is also Pitmaster. But, you know, folks ask me how I get into barbecue. And the honest truth is I love to eat and I love to cook. And in fact, at one point about 30 years ago, I mentioned to somebody that I wouldn't mind being in the barbecue business. And they said, you don't want to do that. You just want to eat it all the time. And you'll eat up all your profits. Don't do that. So, but one of our passions at the Rescue Mission is we love to put people back to work. Let's get folks jobs. Let's get them back in the workforce. Let's build them up, get them feeling good about themselves. And that means doing something productive in our society, getting a job, making money. And, of course, we had the furniture factory at the old location. And the reason we got into the furniture business, I had a little bit of background in woodworking, but we had some property right next door to us that we could buy. It was very cheap. And it had these great big concrete warehouses on it. And one of them had been a furniture factory before. The electrical wiring was already there. So I thought, well, great. Let's get people jobs and we'll build things. Well, TxDOT has already torn that building up. It's gone. And we've got to come up with a new vocational rehab program. So I'm thinking, okay. And frankly, the furniture didn't work that great because they're not other furniture making or cabinetry jobs that you can transition into getting out of the Rescue Mission. So it was not making any money. And the government keeps increasing our wage rate and you know, then we're fighting against imports and it's going the way of the textile business. You know, that work is not going to be available. Well, what is it that we can do using unskilled labor that regardless of what happens in the economy, there are going to be jobs available? And as Texans, we love to eat, and most of all, we love to eat barbecue. So let's go into the food service business. Let's train food service workers. I have been a student of barbecue for well over 40 years, and I can teach these folks how to make the very finest beef brisket in the state of Texas. Let's train workers, and let's get them employed.
Now, when you came up with this idea, just out of curiosity, how did, for example, you know, city council members or other people respond to this?
Ideas like
the idea of having a barbecue.
Well, those that have tasted it keep telling me, when are you going to be open? Now, we already are open for catering, so I can cater events. And in fact, I've got tomorrow need to crank up the smokers because we're catering for the Rotary Club downtown. So I've got a number of jobs like that. As far as the restaurant being open, and to answer your question, government loves this one. Because there is an old building that came on the property that we bought that was constructed in 1905. It was originally built as an office for trolley car workers. and it's right across Cotton Street from the old trolley car barn. It's at the corner of Cotton and Olive, and it has been boarded up for 35 years. And I think the architecture of it is beautiful. It looks kind of like an old train station. It is a solid brick building, and we've already gutted the inside of it. It was divided up into little bitty offices. Fortunately, none of those walls were load-bearing, so we tore that out, took the plaster off the wall, and here is this magnificent early 20th century brickwork on the inside. So it's going to be a beautiful dining room. We'll rehab that building. It needs a new roof. That will be the dining room for the Hallelujah BBQ.
And when is that scheduled to open, Blake?
Well, we need to raise a little more money to get that fix-up done. I'm hoping in about a year.
Now, we've been talking about some of the great things that you all do, and people might be thinking, well, you know, I remember when you all were by the Union Depot, and very few people wanted to go there, and because, you know, they said it was dangerous to be there at night, or some people just didn't want to be around there. However, you've changed, and as you mentioned, you were in Paisano since 1985, and things have changed. So tell us a little bit about the people, the residents of the rescue mission. Who's eligible to go there? And when they go there, what are they going to experience?
Well, 1985 was a little before my time. I came to El Paso in 88 after I got out of Baylor Law School. So I don't know the circumstances around the spot where we were on San Francisco Street around the train station. Of course, the rescue mission is a drug and alcohol-free facility, and we're in the rehabilitation business. So you cannot be dry-out tank and rehab in the same spot. So if you're using drugs or alcohol, you can't be there. And I think we have a very safe, well-behaved population because, you know, really the where the rubber meets the road is here are the rules, and if you don't want to comply with these rules, then you're not going to be able to stay, and the next spot is under the bridge. So that's a mighty powerful incentive. Let's improve ourselves and let's comply with the rules. But, you know, another thing that you mentioned, the character of our population of people who are homeless around the United States has changed over the last few years for a reason that you would never think of, and that is the demise of the boxcar. Now, the old-timers tell me that we were intentionally located by the city at our old spot on Paisano because that's where the train slowed down as it approached downtown. And transients could jump out of the boxcar and come into the rescue mission for a meal and a shower. Well, we no longer have very many boxcars. We have intermodal transportation with the boxes that are on there. And you can't jump on an intermodal car. So now if you're a traveling person, it's your thumb up in the air or buy a ticket on Greyhound, and we no longer get train travelers.
And what about as far as who is there now, who comes by? You see occasionally you'll see some people, when you were on Paisano, you would see some people standing right by the underpass coming into UTEP. And some of them would have perhaps a dog. Someone would be by themselves. And then a lot of them would say, you know, U.S. vet or need help. So some people would say, I'm not sure if I believe that sign, or and then there are others who say, you know, you just can't say no to someone.
Yeah. You may be aware, a couple of years ago, I published a book called Stories from the Shelter. And in fact, you can go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble and buy the book. It's $14.95. And I wrote a chapter in there. And I was trying to describe all of the people that I've met over the years coming into the rescue mission. And there was a chapter in there about a guy who had a cardboard sign and was standing on a street corner. And the way the story goes, he'd come into the rescue mission, and he was quite inebriated at the time. It was in the winter. It was cold. And I politely told him that he would not be able to stay here and that we were a rehabilitation facility, but that I would give him a ride to another shelter where he could stay. And so he gets in my car, and we're driving downtown, and he says, "I don't know why you guys are always after me to get a job. I have a job." And from the looks of him, it was kind of hard to believe what he could have been doing. And I said, "Really, what is your job?" And he reaches into this old blue jean jacket he had on with holes in it, and he pulls out a piece of cardboard, and on the cardboard it says, "Why lie? I need a beer." And that was just, it was fascinating to me. And he holds this cardboard, and he says, "I fly a sign." And that was his job. And he really believed that. He did not want my help in finding a real job. He had a job, and his job was standing on a street corner holding a cardboard sign. Now, you'll see a lot of folks that say, you know, stranded. And of course, we have all kinds of different stories behind each person. But typically, you see the same person on the street corner day in and day out. So most probably, these are folks who are not traveling. They're not stranded. They're just that's the way they treat it. That's their job. And guess what? As long as the people of El Paso keep paying them to do that job, they'll keep doing the job. So my advice to folks is do not hand out money. If the person is really in need, they'll be grateful for a granola bar. Carry a bottle of water or a granola bar in your car. And you can tell if you roll down your window and hand them a granola bar, you can tell instantly by the expression on the face what the need really is.
One of the concerns that people have or have had, and I guess this might be from watching television or reading some of these novels, the fact that where you were located on Paisano, and again, where the railroad went by there slowly and people might get off. And that is the fact that there may be violence amongst themselves, especially if they have been drinking or doing something else.
We did see that in the past. There was, long about 2003 or four, there was a group of folks that was coming through, getting off the railroad track. And the reason I know is in one of the camps that was down there when they finally left, we went down and confiscated some rather scary-looking weapons in the camp. And as I say, that has been a problem in the past. Now that we're not seeing train travelers, basically now the group coming into the rescue mission are the people from El Paso. These are our neighbors who have fallen on hard times, and they need our help. And it's not a violent group. They're very well behaved, and they're very, very appreciative.
Blake, we have a misconception, I think, that a lot of times the homeless person would be the person wearing a military jacket, scroungy beard, perhaps a dog, and that cardboard sign that you mentioned. But a lot of times some of these homeless people are families and young ladies, children. And that is something that, you know, is difficult because they may not want to go to a place where there may be a lot of men there. They're afraid and you know, you can't blame them for that. So tell us about what you all are doing. And you mentioned that you want to pretty soon build a family unit. So what is going on right now?
Well, and that reminds me of a story that really changed a lot of the ways that we were doing things. Is about 10 years ago, there was an older lady that I saw sitting in our lobby. And she had just come in. It was a cold winter night. And she was sitting in a chair in the lobby, and she just had dinner, and she was trying to warm up a little bit, and I knew she hadn't checked in for the night. So I went to talk to her to see what the situation was, and she had a van in the parking lot, and she was just trying to warm up a little bit, and then she was going to go back and sleep in her van. And I said, "Well, you don't need to do that. We'll give you a bed. We have another bed." And she says, "Well, my little dog is in the van." And that little dog was all she had. That was her family. And so, you know, we do see some folks that come in and they have a dog. And this is very important. You've got to be able to take care of the dogs as well. So we built dog kennels. And in the new facility, we have a great dog kennel that we're about to build. And it's another one of these great historical stories that the lot where we have built our new facility used to be part of the El Paso Juarez Trolley Car Company. And at the back side of that lot are some concrete sheds, and those were the stables for the mules that pulled the trolley cars prior to 1902. And there's some mangers back there, great big heavy concrete partitions. So we have preserved those, and we'll put cyclone fencing down the middle and a gate at the front, and those will be dog kennels.
It seems like, you know, people who want to go and visit the rescue mission, they're not just going to go see a place where El Paso reaches out to homeless, but also a lot of historical places and things.
I love preserving history. It's going to be a great job preserving this building for the Hallelujah BBQ restaurant. And, of course, another exciting thing about that, and you mentioned other expansion areas, the next phase, we need to build a family shelter. And we've never had a problem with a child being abused in any way at the rescue mission. We get lots of kids. In the 19 years that I've been there, I've probably had 500 kids come through. But I would love to have a separate facility on a separate lot where our children can be cared for in a much more nourishing environment. So that's what we're going to build next. And then, of course, the hardest group of people to employ is that single mother that has children to take care of. And how do you balance daycare and school and these other expenses? And how much can you earn to try to balance this budget? Well, what better setup than to have your restaurant on the same lot as the family shelter? So then as the kids go off to school during the day, the mother can work the lunch shift in the restaurant.
As far as the people are checked into the rescue mission, how long are they allowed to stay there? Because, you know, in some instances, they don't know how long they're going to be without a home. They don't know if they're going to be able to get a job. So what is the situation in instances like this, Blake?
We take it on a case-by-case basis. I want to see what you're doing to help yourself. And now we also do a lot of medical care and hospice care. So in the new facility, we now have 8 rooms with 2 beds per room that we can accept patients that are discharged from the hospitals and have no place to go. We have a full-time nurse, a registered nurse, 7 days a week. So we're getting a lot of folks that still need someone with some medical knowledge to look after them, and they need a place to recover. Now, I'm not going to say to somebody coming in like that, you've got 30 days. I don't know how long you're going to need help, but and we have some folks that have been there for quite a while. And maybe due to age or disability, we have people in wheelchairs. There is not any other place they can go. And, well, then let's provide them a home.
Blake mentioned at the beginning of the interview that we were going to talk a little bit about yourself, and we'll talk more about the rescue mission in just a minute. But and you mentioned before the program even started the fact that you left Baylor Law School, and so that gives us a little bit of interest there that we can go into. And we attend the same church, you and I, so I know also that you're a very talented musician and a writer, as you mentioned, because I read the book. But tell us a little bit about who is Blake Barrow and how did you get interested in this?
Wow, that's a big question. I'm still trying to figure out the answer to that one. I love music, and I do play bassoon. I can't say that I play it as well as I press the button on the machine and run a CD of a fine bassoon player. But I love the sounds. We designed our new chapel with a lot of acoustics in mind, and it's a great facility. But yes, I have 4 college degrees. Went to Baylor for 3 of them, and then to Emory University for a theology degree. So my last degree was at law school. And graduated Baylor Law in 1988 and got a job here with Scott Hulse, Marshall, Fuelfinger, and Thurmond. So came out to work as a lawyer, and then God called me into the ministry of helping folks who are homeless in 1997. And that was a big raise for me to go from being a trial lawyer to serving the kingdom of God. So it's very much a divine calling, and that's chapter one in the book. Chapter one's about 20 pages long, so I could keep going for the rest of the show, but I can't imagine anything more fulfilling than serving the people that we serve at the rescue mission.
Well, you've met so many people at the rescue mission, not just people who go through there, but also some of the workers, because I'm sure that you get close to some of the workers who stay at the rescue mission but are also working there. And so with the book that you wrote, I would imagine that, you know, there are just so many more stories that you could tell, and you had to decide which ones am I going to fit in here.
Yeah, volume two. The interesting thing, when I got ready to publish the book, I had a lot of pictures in there. And being a lawyer, this kind of thing really aggravated me. I hate to have other lawyers tell me, you can't do that. So I sent it off to the publisher. And after a couple of weeks, the publisher calls me up and they said, we can't print any of these pictures, that you've taken pictures of people who are in a homeless shelter. And unless we have a notarized release from that individual giving us permission to use their likeness, no pictures. Well, I had one picture of this cute little 4-year-old boy sitting in my chair, and he loved to come into my office. He was there with his mother, and he would come into my office, and this little 4-year-old was just starved for dad. And he kind of adopted me. I became his dad. And he wanted to spend time in my office. And if ever I got up and walked out, he would instantly jump into my chair. So I get a picture of him sitting in my chair, and it was my favorite picture in the whole book. And this publisher is saying, you can't use that picture. Well, unknown to them, that was when he was 4 years old. At the time I was writing the book, he was then 19, and we were Facebook friends. And he was just starting college in San Jose, California. So I wrote to him and told him the situation. He signed the release, and his picture's there. And guess what? He called me yesterday. So he's doing really well, and we had a long conversation, wants to get out and see the new shelter, so he's excited for us.
You know, it's interesting what you just mentioned, because a lot of people sometimes will put social media down, and I understand that we've become a nation, a world obsessed with social media and devices and stuff like that, but the fact that you were able to use Facebook to reach out to this young man, I mean, that just shows you that there are some very good things. I'm sure that you've run across many friends and perhaps even lost long cousins that you hadn't seen in years, and all of a sudden they're on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So tell us about when I mentioned the fact that some of the volunteers who live there may do something, whether it be at the reception desk or help clean, et cetera. I guess this gives them a sense of responsibility also, that they're doing something to help.
You know, I think it's very important that everyone pull their weight as much as they can. And in fact, I upset some people when I did this one a few years ago. I actually made the front page of the El Paso Times, and the article was entitled, No More Free Lunch at the Rescue Mission. Do you remember that one? Yeah, okay. Well, of course, we were passing out food. We were feeding everybody free of charge. And the change was really motivated by economic crisis. I mean, we were broke. And so here I am trying to figure out how to make payroll, trying to figure out how to buy food, how to pay the electric bill. And we were at the Paisano location, and I'm driving up the Yandell overpass. And I see a man coming back, walking across the bridge, and I recognized him. He'd been there at the mission. And I can see he's got a big gulp in one hand and a sack in the other, and there's a giant bag of potato chips sticking out of the sack and all these things that he's got. And I'm going, man, this guy probably just dropped $10 or $15 at the Circle K on junk food, and yet we're feeding him and asking nothing in return. So we went to an idea of charging $1.50 for a meal. And along with that, we immediately upgraded the quality of the food. So it's a great meal. And the idea is everybody's got some money, or you can get some money, and let's get folks to pull their weight. Well, of course, we're a drug and alcohol-free facility. We had this camp behind us by the railroad track, and folks would camp out under the railroad bridge. And those folks were out there because they didn't want to comply with the no drugs or alcohol. But they would come in and they'd want dinner. Well, guess what I just did? I didn't think this through. I didn't realize I was doing it this way. I'm now forcing them to make an economic decision. Do you put aside $1.50 for food, or do you save it all for beer? And within 30 days, they all decided to save it all for beer. Well, that just improved the standard of living for the rest of the people at the rescue mission, because now I've got a population that wants to help themselves, and they're pitching in. Now, of course, we always get those that maybe they don't have any money at all, and as much as they're trying, well, then we can create a chore. And I've got a guy who scoots along in a wheelchair. He's got one leg, and he'll have a broom and a dustpan. And his job is to pick up all of the trash that's in the parking lot. And in exchange for that, he gets his meal tickets every day. So he feels better about himself. He's really doing a job. He's working. He's improving the surroundings. And he gets to eat the reward.
I think also at the top of the program, we talked about this Hallelujah Barbecue. And a lot of times people, when they say, oh, I'm going to barbecue, they mean they're going to grill something, not the actual barbecue. So if you wouldn't mind giving us like a quick scenario as to what you're going to teach some of the residents there.
You know, I accomplished a tremendous feat over the last 2 months. I've now been 60 days without anybody asking for sauce to put on their brisket. And as you know, true Texas barbecue does not have sauce. So we use the Central Texas tradition, which was created by Germans and German immigrants in the 19th century. And in fact, the barbecue is a multicultural facet. And the word barbecue actually comes from a French word meaning from whiskers to tail. And so the idea was that you smoked the entire animal. Our beef brisket is our specialty. We use a rub that we created ourselves, and it goes on the smoker early in the morning. We use post oak for our wood, and it smokes for 16 hours. So then we take it off of the smoker, and we've learned to put it in an igloo chest, no ice, just put it in the igloo chest, stack them all up, and close the lid, and let it very, very slowly cool. And that process sucks all the juices back into the meat. And when I start slicing a brisket, after about three briskets that I've sliced, I've got to stop and wipe off all of the juice that has flowed out of this brisket. They're so moist.
Well, I just think you left our listeners with a taste in their mouth that they want to go get some. Thank you so much for being with us, Blake.
You're welcome. God bless you. Thank you.
We've been visiting with Blake Barrow. He is the CEO and Executive Director of the Rescue Mission, and soon to come also, well, it's already there, Hallelujah Barbecue, but right now just for catering, but it will be available for people to go in and have some of the barbecue as well. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Felipe Talavera. Our producer is Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.